the CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 5656 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 5656.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup, Capital Chaos.
Republicans divided over health care reform.
President Trump's Supreme Court pick in the hot seat.
What is your view of President Trump's comments on judges?
And England on edge as a terror rampage kills four.
They came to honor the dead and in part to bolster solidarity among the living.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. A stunning culmination to the week in Washington. Late Friday, House Speaker Paul Ryan pulled the GOP's health care bill after meeting with President Trump. Too many Republicans failed to support it. Here's Ryan speaking to reporters.
I will not sugarcoat this. This is a disappointing day for us. Doing big things is hard. All of us, myself included, we will need time to reflect on how we got to this moment. What we could have done to do it better.
Democrats claiming victory. The DNC calling it a, quote, rejection of the repeal of the Affordable Care Act. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi.
It's a victory. What happened on the floor is a victory for the American people, for our seniors, for people with disabilities, for our children, for our veterans.
Let's talk about this with CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff. Bill, what do we know about what happened?
Well, this is a big political game of chicken that ended very suddenly when, depending on the reports you want to believe, either Paul Ryan told the president he didn't have the votes and the president requested that the bill be pulled, or that Ryan begged, in one reporter's words, the president to see it his way, and then the president acquiesced. But either way, it's political damage for the Republicans because of this. But there's also a domino effect in this, Steve, in that there was a reason that health care was picked up first. There was going to be tax reform next. Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, was looking for hundreds of billions of dollars in the reduction of the deficit in the American Health Care Act, and that would have helped pad impacts of tax cut reform down the line. So now that this bill has been pulled, it will have ramifications on other legislation down the road.
All right, so they didn't get 216 votes needed in the House to pass this bill. Who were the key players in scuttling this?
Well, you can point right to Mark Meadows, who was the leader of the Freedom Caucus, dug his heels in, most of his caucus staying firm, if not all, behind him. And he was the one that really dictated the control of this. So they kept saying that they were optimistic about working on a solution. But at the same time, when asked, no, we're not there yet. We can't agree to this. We can't agree to that. And so at the end of the day, where they really needed those people on board to bring down the number of Republican no votes, they just weren't coming from the Freedom Caucus. If you did something to appease the moderates of the Conservative Party who were interested in trying to get on board, then you ticked off the conservatives. If you tried to give the conservatives something, then the moderates said something. But in the end of the day, the Freedom Caucus held the reins.
And what happens next?
Good question. So I think what happens now, there is still the possibility that there might be some reconciliation bill down the line next week. They start talking about it. A lot of people just want to kind of walk away, at least for the weekend, kind of shake their heads, get the cobwebs loose, and maybe come back at it again. But the official tone from the White House, from everybody else, is we're moving on.
CBS News correspondent Bill Rakoff joining the Weekend Roundup here in the Washington Bureau. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
4 days of confirmation hearings for Supreme Court nominee Judge Neil Gorsuch commanded the attention of the Senate.
The initials are DJT.
Senate Democrats repeatedly challenged Judge Gorsuch on the policies of the man who nominated him.
President Trump and others have said, you are the next Scalia.
He's called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
What is your view of President Trump's comments on judges?
But only when pressed on President Trump's public attacks on judges did Gorsuch offer a firm response.
And when anyone criticizes the honesty or integrity, the motives
of a federal judge. Well, I find that disheartening. I find that demoralizing because I know the truth.
Anyone, including the President of the United States?
Anyone is anyone.
Gorsuch rejected the idea that with his nomination, President Trump had fulfilled a promise to select a judge opposed to abortion.
Did he ever ask you to overrule Roe v. Wade?
No, Senator.
What would he have done if he'd asked?
Senator, I would have walked out the door.
And he insisted his personal views would have no bearing on his work as a justice.
Senator, a good judge doesn't give a whit about politics.
Jen Crawford reporting, the Judiciary Committee is expected to vote on his nomination Monday. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell hopes to confirm Gorsuch by mid-April. Committee member, South Carolina Republican Lindsey Graham, spoke to CBS this morning about his support for Gorsuch.
He's one of the most qualified people to ever be nominated. 2,700 cases decided at the Tenth Circuit, overruled once by the Supreme Court. I've never seen a more man qualified to be on the Supreme Court. I hope he gets 60 votes. And if he doesn't, it means politics trumps qualifications, and that'd be a loss for the Senate.
Well, you know how to count. Will he get them?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's just so overwhelmingly qualified. President Trump could not have chosen a more qualified conservative. I voted for Sotomayor and Kagan because I thought they were qualified. They were great women of the law. They had a different perspective than I do. But Judge Gorsuch is a mainstream conservative, and I've never really seen anybody do any better in a hearing. He's acquitted himself well. And the point I was trying to make is that waterboarding is illegal under the Detainee Treatment Act. He acknowledged that. And the president's backed off on waterboarding, but nobody is above the law.
So you're not expecting a Democratic filibuster?
I hope not. Let me say this. If there is a Democratic filibuster, that means that qualifications no longer matter. It's all about politics. And the only way I believe you could vote against him is for political reasons, not for politics. And that means that the election didn't matter. You know, I voted for Sotomayor and Kagan because I thought President Obama had the right to pick qualified people that were different than I would have chosen. And Trump picked an outstanding conservative. And I'm hoping my Democratic colleagues will not change the rules of the Senate. I mean, we'll give him 60 votes because he's earned it with a life well lived. I mean, one reversal in 2,700 cases, well qualified by the American Bar Association. President Trump could not have chosen better. This is one of the best people he could have chosen as a conservative in the entire country.
More Democrats, though, are lining up to vote against Gorsuch's nomination, including Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I have come to a decision about the current nominee. After careful deliberation, I have concluded that I cannot support Judge Neil Gorsuch's nomination to the Supreme Court.
Among Schumer's concerns, Gorsuch's record challenging workers' rights.
He is someone who almost instinctively favors the powerful over the weak, corporations over working Americans.
Schumer says Gorsuch should meet the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. Other recent Supreme Court nominees have met. Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, remembering the American and three others killed in the Westminster terror attack. That and more on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. 54-year-old Kurt Cochran from Utah was one of four people killed in that London attack in Westminster, his wife injured. The attacker was also killed. Here's correspondent Elizabeth Palmer.
The man who left this trail of carnage in the heart of London was Khalid Massoud. 52 years old and British-born, he was shot by police. Overnight, officers raided properties linked to Massoud, who had a petty criminal record, but was not currently under investigation for any links to violent extremism. Nonetheless, ISIS claimed that he was a soldier of the Islamic State. He was also a terrorist who stabbed policeman Keith Palmer to death and murdered Aisha Fraid, a teacher and mother of two, with his car, along with American Kurt Cochran from Utah, who was in London with his wife Melissa for their wedding anniversary. She was injured and is still in the hospital. The injured came from 11 countries, among them French high school students, South Korean tourists, and a Romanian architect, Andrea Cristea. In security camera video, as the car barrels along the sidewalk, she tumbles off the bridge into the icy river. Just a day ago, this whole area was strewn with bodies. But in the famous British spirit of keep calm and carry on, the British authorities are determined things should return to normal as soon as possible. Less than 24 hours after the attack, Westminster Bridge was open to traffic. In Parliament, politicians observed a minute of silence and then heard a tough-minded message from Prime Minister Theresa May.
We are not afraid, and our resolve will never waver in the face of terrorism.
Thousands of Londoners gathered in Trafalgar Square for a vigil led by the city's Muslim mayor, Sadiq Khan. In part, they came to honour the dead, and in part, to bolster solidarity among the living.
CBS News senior national security analyst, former Homeland Security Advisor to President George W. Bush, Fran Townsend, talked with CBS this morning on European security following the attack.
What they're trying to understand is, now that they know who the individual is who is dead, who was shot by police, they're identifying his associates. They're looking at things, not only his home, they'll look at his electronic communications. They'll get hold of everything they can to try and understand who influenced him. If they're in London, do they pose a threat? And I think that's what we're seeing play out in the raids in Birmingham and the recent arrests.
Fran, this is the third vehicle attack in Europe over the past year. What's your impression of the connection, if any, there?
The day of the attack was the one-year anniversary of Brussels. We've seen, as you mentioned, the Berlin Christmas market attack and the Nice promenade attack. And we know that ISIS has called for such attacks. You know, this is one of these things. They put out a public call, and every alienated, unhappy human, right, it's their moment. And so I think that's what Chief Rowley is referring to when he says it's sort of inspired by international terror.
Fran, from a security perspective, what can be done to prevent future vehicle attacks?
These are the most difficult sort of attacks to anticipate and prevent. And so what you see is you take the Eiffel Tower is now putting up these plexiglass, bulletproof glass, iconic places will take measures to put a perimeter there. But, you know, the idea is to get these intelligence-driven operations to identify the individuals before the day where they decide, this is my moment. And you put the perimeters there at iconic places to try and protect tourists, frankly.
Is there a strong sense of shared information about terrorism today?
You know, I will tell you, Charlie, there is no one the U.S. intelligence community shares more transparently with than our British counterparts. And so I feel confident that the American intelligence agencies are acting as if this happened here. The question has been the greater sort of challenges within Europe, the sharing of information. And we see post-Brussels and Paris, greater efforts to be made to have European intelligence agencies do a better job of sharing. But I'll tell you, the pros in Europe are the British. And so they do this better than anybody.
CBS News senior national security analyst Fran Townsend. President Trump's former campaign manager will be questioned by lawmakers as part of a probe by the House Intelligence Committee on the Kremlin's alleged meddling in the 2016 election, Chairman Republican Devin Nunes.
The counsel for Paul Manafort contacted the committee yesterday to offer the committee the opportunity to interview his client. We thank Mr. Manafort for volunteering.
Nunes told reporters the communications of Trump transition officials were scooped up by intelligence agencies. It was a surprise to members of his own committee, and he later apologized for telling the president before telling them. CBS News national security contributor, former deputy director of the CIA, Mike Morrell, who supported Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, offered his take to Scott Pelley.
Michael, let me ask you, does this mean that the president was the target of this surveillance?
Scott, this is what we in the intelligence community call incidental collection. And that means that the target was a legitimate foreign national intelligence target and not an American. So, no, Donald Trump was not the target of this collection.
And just because U.S. intelligence is listening in on the conversations of one of these foreign officials doesn't necessarily mean that official is up to something nefarious.
Correct, Scott. There are thousands of conversations every day between U.S. officials and foreign officials, and some of those conversations are picked up. The incidental collection that occurs is numerous, and it happens every day.
Congressman Nunes says that there was really no valuable intelligence in any of this.
Scott, that may be Chairman Nunes's view, but I can tell you that these reports would not have been disseminated by NSA had NSA not believed that there was intelligence value there.
Now, Congressman Nunes discovered these reports, took them to the White House, or I should say took the information to the White House and briefed the president on that. Is that unusual?
Yes, Scott, it is. It sounds to me as if he did not get these reports directly from Mike Rogers at NSA, but somebody else brought them to him. It would have been much more appropriate to have gone back to Director Rogers to ask about the reports, to get a full readout, a full review of the reports, and then it would have also been appropriate to have discussed that with his committee and not run to the White House immediately.
That is not what generally happens with the chairman of the Intelligence Committee.
That's correct, Scott.
Thank you very much. Michael Morrell, former number two at the CIA.
Nunes says he's seen no evidence of a wiretap of the Trump campaign, despite claims from President Trump. The Trump administration has issued a presidential permit for the Keystone XL oil pipeline. More from CBS News reporter Allison Keyes in Washington.
The presidential permit clears the way for the Keystone XL pipeline, with the State Department declaring that it serves the national interest. This after a review of environmental and economic impacts. TransCanada's chief executive, Russ Girling, calls it a significant milestone. But environmental groups who oppose the pipeline vow to continue their battle via political protest, petitions, and political pressure.
Up next,
what we have is famine looming over. Over 20 million people
on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your jobs on all the top job sites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter.com. You can post your jobs to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free trial. One more time, ZipRecruiter.com/free trial.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A dual citizen of the U.S. and Israel has been charged with a wave of threats against Jewish community centers and schools. More from correspondent Jeff Pagase.
The 18-year-old suspect hid underneath his blue sweatshirt during a court appearance in Israel on Thursday. He is accused of calling in bomb threats to dozens of Jewish community centers and schools across the U.S.
It's a C4 bomb.
This is said to be audio of a message he left at a center in January. According to the FBI and Israeli police, the teenager manipulated his voice. Police found computer equipment and an antenna at his home Thursday. His father is also in custody for questioning.
These threats have impacted entire communities.
Secure Community Network National Director Paul Goldenberg says in the last 75 days, Jewish institutions or structures have been threatened 300 times. Is there a spike now?
There is a spike.
What do you attribute it to?
There are a lot of folks out there who have been emboldened by this rhetoric that we've seen on the internet and in other social media sites. Today, with a click of a finger, hatred can reach tens of thousands of people.
The suspect's defense attorney claims her client is sick. The suspect suffers from a brain tumor that may have had an effect on his cognitive functions, she said.
Because of his very, very serious medical condition, didn't serve in the army, didn't go to high school, didn't go to elementary school.
Millions of lives are at stake as hunger sweeps through East Africa and Yemen.
Their mothers have trekked for miles to this hospital in Somalia. The babies all have the same diagnosis, starvation.
What we have is famine looming over 20 million people in Yemen, South Sudan, Somalia, and northeast Nigeria.
Ewan Watson from the International Red Cross says more than 20 million people could die if aid isn't mobilized now. Vicki Barker, CBS News.
A manhunt is underway to find a missing Tennessee girl. Police say she was abducted by a former teacher. More from correspondent Don Daler.
Investigators believe Tad Cummins convinced Elizabeth Thomas to run away with him. Cummins was fired from his teaching job last week over alleged inappropriate behavior with the teen. Now her family and friends are hoping she can break away and come back home.
Please come back to us. We love you very much.
Anthony Thomas made an emotional plea to his daughter, Elizabeth, who is the focus of a nationwide manhunt.
Izzy, please get away from him. Get away from him. Run somewhere. Tell somebody.
The 15-year-old has not been seen in 9 days. Police believe she is with 50-year-old Tad Cummins. Josh Devine is with the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation.
Everything that we're learning about him does nothing to calm our fears and our concerns for her.
A former forensics teacher, Cummins was caught kissing Thomas by another student in January. While Thomas denied a kiss took place, her parents said school officials did not notify them until a week after the incident.
We grew up together and we became like sisters.
Ashley Riggin says she's Thomas's best friend. She claims her friend told her she was falling in love with someone, but did not realize it was with her teacher. The teen's father is hoping Cummins will heed his urgent message.
You better bring her back.
Cummins claims to be a black belt, and investigators believe he is armed with at least 2 handguns.
Why less educated, middle-aged white people are dying younger. They are called deaths of despair. Suicides, drug overdoses, alcohol-related deaths. Since this century began, white men and women, 45 to 54, enduring a sharp increase. Now, Princeton researchers say middle-aged white Americans with less than a college education are increasingly dying younger. These researchers point out that while less educated white people do represent President Trump's power base, ironically, his policies will only hurt them more. At the same time, death rates of middle-aged African Americans and Hispanics improving. Jim Taylor, CBS News. The diary of JFK now at auction is showing Americans a new side to him. Here's correspondent Tony DeCopel on the president's interest in Hitler.
When JFK was writing about Hitler, the dictator's suicide had happened just 4 months earlier. JFK's diary was published in book form in the mid-1990s, but now we're getting a look at the handwritten pages, and it's showing us a side of Kennedy we've never seen before.
This generation of Germans has earned the right to be free.
Some 2 decades before addressing crowds in West Berlin as president, John F. Kennedy wrote these 61 diary pages, 12 in longhand, 49 typed, in the summer of 1945. Germany had just surrendered, and the 28-year-old JFK was touring Europe as a newspaper correspondent, traveling shoulder to shoulder with leaders from around the world. The young JFK's final destination, Germany, just months after the Allied victory. Already a scholar on global politics, Kennedy seemed fascinated with Hitler and his place in history, writing, "He had in him the stuff of which legends are made." And within a few years, Hitler will emerge from the hatred that surrounds him now as one of the most significant figures who ever lived. Bobby Livingston works for the auction house offering the diary.
There's no glorification, and I wouldn't take this out of context. I think Kennedy was a historian, and he's writing his understanding of Hitler's place in history.
Kennedy writes, "Hitler had boundless ambition for his country, which rendered him a menace to the peace of the world. But he had a mystery about him and the way he lived and the manner of his death that will live and grow after him." Kennedy gave the diary to his Senate research assistant, Deidre Henderson, who published it in book form in the mid-90s. She's now auctioning the original document, providing a new window into the man who would be president.
He's about to embark on this incredible journey to the presidency, and here it is in his handwriting, the beginning of this journey.
And the diary is going to go on auction on April 26th. The winning bid is expected to be about $200,000.
A new report on drowsy driving estimates it causes some 1 million accidents every year in the U.S., killing up to 8,000 people.
6 years ago, Carrie Warren lost her son Tyler in a crash. Police say he fell asleep at the wheel.
I remember screaming at the top of my lungs and sort of collapsing.
A new report from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration estimates there are 1.2 million collisions every year because of drowsy driving, killing up to 8,000 people.
The agency says steps need to be taken to prevent drowsy driving, including more signs warning people of the dangers. The group is also calling for more states to make laws that punish drivers who fall asleep at the wheel.
Mercedes-Benz has developed Attention Assist.
Technology may also help. Several automakers, including Mercedes and Ford, have systems that can read your steering habits and can detect when you are drowsy.
It gives you an audible and visual warning in your instrument cluster.
If people are reminded that they need to pull over and rest, that's certainly a good thing.
Kelsey Mays from Cars.com says people shouldn't rely on their vehicle alone to wake them up.
It's important that you recognize the signs of your own drowsiness.
Doing so could mean the difference between life and death. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup.
We haven't seen him here in the park since 2001.
A new buzz for the endangered species list. Please follow us on Twitter. We have headlines at CBS Radio News, and I'm at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. North Korea may have had a role in the biggest bank heist of all time. The cyber theft happened last February, targeting Bangladesh's account in the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. More from correspondent Vladimir Dutier.
The hackers are said to have used a payment messaging system known as SWIFT to request money from the Bangladesh Central Bank to move to accounts in the Philippines. Now, security officials say if North Korea was behind this threat, we could be seeing the rise of a new global security threat.
Just weeks after test firing four missiles, North Korea could be expanding its capabilities on an additional battlefront, cyber warfare. Investigators now say evidence could connect North Korea to a cyber theft totaling $81 million. Sources tell CBS News the codes used by hackers in last February's bank heist are similar to those used in the cyber attack against Sony Pictures in 2014, which investigators have connected to North Korea. NSA Deputy Director Richard Leggett told a cybersecurity panel this week that if confirmed, the link would be significant.
That means a nation state is robbing banks. That's a big deal, in my view.
In this latest attack, hackers used a global payment messaging system called SWIFT. The virtual messenger helps some 11,000 financial institutions communicate to transfer money. Once hackers gained access to the system, they were able to create messages instructing the Federal Bank of New York to release the money from the Bangladesh bank accounts. Eric Chin is a technical director with security vendor Symantec, which investigated the crime.
We're reasonably confident that the Bangladesh attacks are tied to attacks that happened on Sony. So we can say that this is definitely the same group or a group of people who had access to those same tools.
I interview this guy.
Are you joking me, man?
The FBI says the 2014 Sony hack was carried out by North Korea, apparently in retaliation over the film The Interview, which mocked the nation's leader, Kim Jong-un. While no formal charges have been brought against North Korea, security experts are paying close attention to this case.
This group remains active. We clearly see them coming after other banks, including U.S. banks, in the future.
Eric Chin says the hackers actually tried to take $1 billion, but because of some typos and some other mistakes, only succeeded in taking $81 million. But they say that if the hackers are able to improve their tools, we may see them going after bigger targets in the future.
Doctors want parents to do more to keep opioid drugs out of the hands of their kids.
The number of children exposed to prescription opioids has fallen since 2009, but levels are still up from 2000, and that has doctors concerned.
Lots of bad things can happen when children get into these medicines. Children getting sleepy, even to the point of coma and death, and children getting respiratory depression where they decrease breathing or even stop breathing.
A study in the journal Pediatrics found the main groups at risk for exposure are curious youngsters under 5 and teenagers looking to either get high or harm themselves. And while pediatric exposure to most prescription painkillers has declined, exposure to buprenorphine continues to climb. It's prescribed to people who've previously been addicted to drugs.
Buprenorphine is the safest for the addicts. Turns out to be extremely dangerous to young children.
The group Save Kids Worldwide says each year 60,000 kids, or 4 busloads, wind up in emergency rooms because they got into medicine.
Parents should keep medication stored up and away, out of sight and out of reach, every time after every single use.
Parents are also advised to keep medicine in its original packaging. Start practicing safe storage as soon as your first child is born, and save the poison help number in your phone, as well as posting it in the house. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
New concerns about microfibers in the world's waters. Here's Ben Tracy.
They're in everything from yoga pants to running shorts to that soft, fuzzy fleece. Tiny shreds of plastic that shed in the wash and can be eaten by the same marine life we eat. Unlike dryers, most washing machines don't have filters that trap lint. So when you throw synthetic garments in the wash, material breaks off and can slip past sewage treatment plants and into waterways. The so-called microfibers have turned up in waters across the globe, including Lake Michigan and along the shores of the Gulf of Mexico.
When we see reports showing microfiber in the ocean, in fish, in plankton, you know, we're alarmed by its impact.
Doug Freeman is Chief Operating Officer of Patagonia, which is trying to find a solution. The company, known for its outdoor apparel such as fleece jackets, funded a study on microfibers last year by the University of California, Santa Barbara. Researchers there found that a single synthetic fleece jacket released as much as 250,000 microfibers when washed in a machine. Newer, higher quality garments shed less than older ones.
Even a wastewater treatment plant that's filtering up to 95%, there's still a really high number that are getting through.
Project researcher Bess Ruff says underwater creatures can ingest the material.
For fish, a lot of times the microfibers are found in their intestines, and most of the times we're not eating that part. So direct ingestion with fish isn't as much of a concern, but with shellfish, they're actually getting embedded in the tissue, and that's the part that we eat.
If you're aware this is a significant problem and that you're contributing to it, why not just stop selling these items?
Because in many cases, these items have longer useful life than their biodegradable counterparts.
Ben Tracy, CBS News, Los Angeles.
For the first time, a bumblebee has landed on the endangered species list. Correspondent Mark Strassman has more from Tennessee.
In eastern Tennessee's Great Smoky Mountains National Park, the only place you can now see a rusty-patched bumblebee is inside this drawer, part of the park's nature collection.
These two boxes here.
Entomologist Becky Nichols.
We haven't seen them here in the park since 2001.
Not a single one.
No.
Rusty-patched bumblebees, important pollinators for tomatoes, nest underground. Over the last 20 years, the species has suffered a 90% decline in population and habitat, a range that once included 28 states and stretched into the upper Midwest and Northeast. They face many threats.
Loss of habitat, pesticides, diseases, all of these things contribute to the overall decline of pollinators.
Bumblebees, honeybees, butterflies, in all, about 40% of so-called invertebrate pollinator species now face extinction. About 75% of the world's food supply depends at least partly on what they do. Professor Sidney Cameron teaches entomology at the University of Illinois.
One in every third bite of food is pollinated by bees. A huge factor is the bumblebee itself. A lot of our food is dependent upon these bees. If that's not important, I don't know what is.
But Nichols sees new hope.
The first bumblebee to be listed on the endangered species list hopefully will be a little more of a wake-up call that we need to pay closer attention to what we're doing to the pollinators and what they're really doing for us.
Some groups may oppose the new protection and possible regulations for these bumblebees, including pesticide companies, big agricultural interests, and developers.
Netflix for Cars, up next on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS Radio News podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like The Evening News and Face the Nation on demand. Or hear original audio programming like our weekend review show, The Weekend Roundup. You can also hear the story behind the story on Reporter's Notebook or What's Hot on Tech Talk with Larry Magid. Get these podcasts and more from iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. A report by CreditCards.com finds customers usually get results when they complain about unwanted or annoying surcharges.
I'm Gary Nunn. When unwanted fees, high interest rates, and other charges show up on your credit card statement, say something.
Banks are willing to bend over backwards
to really try and retain their current customers.
Analyst Matt Schultz of CreditCard.com says 87% of credit card holders who asked for a late fee waiver got it.
The moral of this story is if you want something, just ask for it.
But only 1 in 4 cardholders actually make such requests. Gary Nunn, CBS News.
There's subscriptions these days for just about everything. Netflix, of course, newspapers, but also wine and even pet treats. But what about cars? CBS News financial contributor Melody Hobson talked with correspondent Anthony Mason and the CBS This Morning team on the latest offer from GM.
So it's $1,500 a month. And if you subscribe to this, you can pick any Cadillac you want through a mobile app. Is that how it works? What's GM going after here?
That's right. So you can pick amongst 10 different cars, 10 different models. You can trade them up to 18 times in the course of the year. And the bottom line, I think of this as like the Tesla-fying of GM. They're trying to be innovative, cool, and really to be able to show that they can be attractive to millennials, maybe expose them to the Cadillac model, the luxury cars that have largely been bought by older Americans.
What will its success depend on, Melody?
Well, this one, I have to say, I don't see this being some huge program that is, you know, going to bring manna from heaven to GM. I think this is such a small niche market. You're talking about such an affluent buyer because the price is expensive, 3 times more what someone would pay if they basically bought a car, what their car payment would be on a monthly payment, on a monthly basis. So you're paying a lot for this ability to switch, which means there are very, very few people that would do this. Right now, it's a pilot program in New York. They say 5,000 people have signed up in some way. They didn't necessarily say subscribed, but they're saying that there's interest and they plan to expand to Los Angeles soon. But again, I don't see this being a huge, huge program.
A torpedo boat that sank 3 enemy ships and took part in 2 invasions in World War II is now back in its home port undergoing restoration efforts. More from Omar Villafranca in New Orleans.
This is PT-305, also known as the USS Sudden Jerk. And this is exactly what the boat looked like during World War II. And if you were a German boat and you saw this vessel, there was probably a torpedo already headed your way. After more than 70 years, the vessel is finally back home, and one of the original crew members took it on another mission.
Very big honor. Thank
you
so much.
Captain George Benedetto, welcome aboard PT-305.
After more than 70 years, Jim Narrison is back on his boat. The last time the former Navy petty officer stepped on PT-305, he was about 19 years old, and the American Navy vessel was stationed off the coasts of France and Italy during World War II.
Did a beautiful job.
On Thursday, the 92-year-old veteran took the newly restored vessel on its inaugural ride on Louisiana's Lake Pontchartrain.
Sounds the same as it did then, the vibration under your feet.
The patrol torpedo, or PT boat, is the latest addition to the National World War II Museum in New Orleans. There are plenty of planes, ships, and other artifacts for people to see at the museum.
Good to have the 305 back in her home.
But soon, visitors will be able to ride on the world's only operational PT.
Each vessel carries 4 torpedoes.
Before it made it back to New Orleans, the boat was barely salvageable. Joshua Schick is one of the museum's curators.
Well, I know what a PT is supposed to look like, so she looked pretty sad to me. You know, she's just a beat-up old work boat.
After her service in World War II, the vessel kept working as a tour boat in New York City and an oyster boat in the Chesapeake Bay. Eventually, what was left of PT-305 was found in Texas. It was brought to the museum to start a vigorous 10-year restoration project.
It took more than 200 volunteers, more than 120,000 hours to restore the boat to what it looked like in World War II.
We had a lot of fun.
A one-time torpedo operator, Narrison still has war stories to tell. He knew the one-ton weapon was fueled by compressed air and 180-proof grain alcohol. Sometimes, he admits, the crew would sip the fuel just to make sure they were battle ready.
The torpedo wasn't going to use it all anyway, so we kind of tapped off a little bit of it.
A little bit of torpedo fuel for yourself.
We call it torpedo juice.
PT-305 ran more than 70 patrol missions and dropped countless torpedoes like this one. but she is not ready for retirement. Next week, she'll start taking history buffs out for a ride on Lake Pontchartrain. Tickets are $350, and that may sound a little bit pricey, but all the tickets for the month of April are already sold out.
A 3-year-old girl from Georgia got a souvenir from the Pope during a visit to the Vatican when she took his hat. Here's correspondent Seth Doan in Rome.
It seemed to be happening in slow motion, Scott Westrick told us. There was the Pope, his daughter, and then the pontiff's skull cap in her hands.
Baby taking the Pope's hat. It's fantastic.
Westrick, his daughter Estella, and some family friends had been waiting for 4 hours to try to see the Pope after his weekly audience.
He went in to give her a kiss on the cheek, and it looked like she kissed him back, and then she made her move.
Mother Alexis was back at the hotel.
It was the first thing she told me when she came in the door. She says, Mommy, I saw the Pope. I got his hat.
But trying to get Estella to tell us about it took some work.
Tell me about your trip.
This 3-year-old does things her way.
Was it funny?
Yeah.
What was funny about it?
I don't know.
Can I take my phone back? No?
And she certainly has a knack for grabbing things.
Okay, you're taking a photo of me.
I think the Pope goes with the flow on these things.
Greg Burke, the director of the Holy See Press Office, says Pope Francis pushes to get closer to the public, as he has a number of times during his Wednesday audience, inviting folks to join him for a ride, blessing the disabled, or hamming it up.
He said, you know, I know security wants more security, they want tidy things, but sorry, I've got to be there with the people.
Estella's godfather, Mountain Butoric, took the video and posted it on Twitter.
The photographers were laughing, there were a couple of Monsignors beside him, they were laughing, the security was laughing.
Good, said Estella, finally coaxed with a little gelato.
Good.
What was good about the Pope?
I got his hat.
You got his hat. You did. And everybody laughed. Did you think you were going to get his hat? Was that the plan, or did you just do it?
I just do it.
We appreciate you listening to the Weekend Roundup. Please keep in mind you can do a search online to find past episodes. Search for CBS News Weekend Roundup. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.